We'll begin with the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker, have you any changes or omissions?
Yes. I'd like to suggest that we delete several items. First, under Mr. Lucky, purchase of CPR assistance devices for consideration in the at a future meeting. And then under Mr. Archit, Milton Library, change order number one. And I'd also like to suggest that under myself, the report on early retirement option occur after Mrs. Webb's quarterly financial report.
Okay. Number four of Mr. Baker's administrator's report will occur right after Mrs. Webb. Does the council have any other changes? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion carried. Approval of the minutes in your packet was the April 7th minutes. Are there any changes? If not, I'll accept those minutes as approved. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Griffin.
I have one item of correspondence. If anyone else has anything, feel free to pass it down. This is a card addressed to County Council from the Seaford Wednesday Morning Prayer Group, indicating that we are praying for council every week for wisdom and guidance in making decisions and the financial situation of the county and state. That's all the correspondence.
Thank you. Does the council have any other correspondence? If not, we'll turn to County Administrator David Baker.
Thank you. First item are tributes for our Emergency Preparedness Department. And with us today, we have three members from the department. On April 16th, the Mideastern Chapter of the Association of Public Safety Communication Officials held an award luncheon in Dover. And our Sussex County staff was recognized for outstanding work. And some of our staff, of course, are here today. And the first tribute is for Joe Thomas, who was selected as the Center Manager of the Year for the state of Delaware for his work, especially last year with a new building, less staff to handle the workload. And he had a number of different trials, such as death of a county paramedic, the vice president coming to Georgetown, budget reductions, and transition to a new building. And the next is for Charles Stevenson IV, who was selected as runner-up for Telecommunicator of the Year for the state of Delaware, and recognizing how he handled very professionally and sympathetically a call of help from parents to locate their lost daughter.
Good.
And then finally, Joseph Pepper, and he is part of a team including Stephen Deary, Jason Boyce, and Jason Faulkner, recipient of the Unit Citation of the Year Award for the state of Delaware, awarded again on April 16th. For handling the call on June 17, 2008, which reported the ambulance accident whereby our paramedic, Stephanie Calloway, did not survive. And then there's one other, our group of dispatchers, Chris Moore, Bob Parson, Lily Fitzgerald, and Earl Chaffinch, were selected as runner-up for the Unit Citation Award for the state of Delaware, recognizing them for handling a February 24th mass casualty incident in Bridgeville, which they handled very professionally. Their shift is working tonight, I understand, so they are not here, but maybe Joe can
take that. I've got Earl and I've got Chris. Who was the third one?
Earl, Chris, Bob Parson, and Lily Fitzgerald. And that's it.
Certainly will.
Thank you, sir.
I
guess Chip wants a picture. Maybe I'll just get in here.
Hope that's a good camera.
the next item is Delaware Lions Club report, and with us today is Reverend Charles Covington, who asked, representing the Lions Club, and he asked to speak to the County Council.
Thank you. First, I would like to introduce Lion Carl Goody, who is a member of the Lord Baltimore Lions Club. I am a member of the Georgetown Lions Club. We are here to make a presentation in behalf of the Delaware Lions Foundation to solicit funds for the work which we do within the state of Delaware. We have prepared a brochure to give an overview of who we are, what we do, and to answer any questions that any of you may have relative to the same. So we will present each member of the council a personal copy for their perusal. The Delaware Lions Foundation is a board of director composed of 12 members, three members from each county, and three ex officio with full voting rights, who is the district governor, the first vice district governor, and the immediate past district governor. The Delaware Lions Foundation is a 501c3 tax-exempt corporation for the 1,250 Lions plus or minus in the state of Delaware and for the 41 clubs of which they are members. The Delaware Lions Foundation is a limited entity foundation in that we only do work within the state of Delaware. We only assist programs, projects, and people within the state of Delaware. Anything beyond the borders are turned down without cause. Due to the more and larger requests which we are receiving, money is a matter of concern, as many of you know. On page one, you will see the mission statement relative to the organization. The Delaware Lions Foundation is the board of directors for the membership of the 40 Lions clubs in the state of Delaware. The board of directors is composed, as you see, which I have already reiterated. So that's who we are and what we are doing. Now, in 2007-08, for that calendar year, we gave assistance to the 40 clubs of $38,000. That is for special projects above and beyond our individual local operating budgets, special causes which came from the communities of which they were a part. In 2008-09, we allocated $45,000 for the same cause of assistance, and it appears that we will spend in the vicinity of $40,000 again this year. In addition to that, last year we gave seven $1,000 scholarships to high school seniors in the state of Delaware in the three counties. This year we gave eight $1,000 scholarships in the three counties. On page three, you will find there the statement that we need help. It is, in a very real sense, whenever a financial gift is given to the Delaware Lions Foundation, it is an ongoing vote of support. It affirms belief in our mission statement and provides essential resources to undergird our commitment to serve humanitarian needs. All receipts will be used to enlarge the operating trust fund, which is a base reserve to ensure the fulfillment of our commitment to be there when we are needed. Your gift, no matter the size or amount, will make a difference in the lives and well-being of needy recipients throughout the length and breadth of our state. I want to thank you, the council, for allowing us the time to make our presentation. As you see, it is a request that you consider and respond according to where you are and what you have. If you have any questions, Lion Goody and I would be happy to entertain them at this time.
Does council have any questions?
Is this, Mrs. Webb, is this something the council has given to before?
We have given small discretionary grants before.
Thank you.
And when I say before, from fiscal year 02 and beyond, so nothing recently.
Okay.
Is this something that could be considered as part of the human service grant?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Has a request been made formally by the Lions?
But to be fair, the process starts with a letter originates from us to the agency requesting a letter of request. So we can certainly put them on the list to receive a letter of request. In September, they go out.
I didn't understand all you said then.
I'm sorry. We have a human service grant program, and you would fit in nicely in that grant category, but you wouldn't have to do anything. We would contact you when it was time for you to submit a letter of request.
You will do that?
Yes, I will. I'll put you on the list, your agency on the list, and then you'll receive a letter from us.
In the meantime, don't be shy about maybe sending the council persons a letter of request. It wouldn't be as significant, I don't think, as maybe what could come out of the human service grant, but individual letter of request for funding for this purpose.
I think we could do that.
Okay. If you want to channel it through Mr. Wilson, he's very persuasive.
And generous.
Thank you very much.
One more in Joan.
I'm very generous. I just wasn't left with a treasury.
Here we go. Mr. Baker, you have the
floor. After July 1,
sir.
The next item we have.
These pamphlets were, excuse me, these pamphlets were given to each member of the council.
Okay. That's fine.
Do you have calls for an additional one or something?
I have one right here. Thank you.
George, you ought to be reading that thing.
This will get me.
It's like some other books I wanted you to read.
You could get a hearing aid.
I'm still reading it.
They might be able to give you a hearing aid.
But Mrs. Webb,
to get past the beginning.
For them to ask for a grant from any of the council people, we need a letter from them.
Yes. Also, to get an individual discretionary grant from their community grants, which if your organization's in Millsboro, then you would go to whoever represents that area and ask for a letter of request and then be specific as to what your needs are in that letter. And then we could possibly get you on the agenda and they could...
I appreciate that, but this is not a local Lions Club. We have 40 Lions Clubs in 40 communities of the state of Delaware. This is their board of directors as a holding foundation, which then utilizes the money as matching funds.
That's important to know, as we went through the grant policy last week and addressed agencies that were not in the county but did have some benefit to the county. So if you could put all that in your letter of request, we'll sort it out and see what we can do.
So you want two letters?
No, just one letter.
Just one
and then
at the present time to each one of the council members.
That's fine.
Thank
and then
you.
I'll contact you.
And you promise us that you're not going to send money out of the county?
Out of the county?
Out of the county. You can't send the money out of the county.
Out of the county, you're saying?
Sussex County.
I didn't promise you that.
You said it's going to a foundation.
That was statewide.
It's statewide.
I said Justice County.
Here.
I can't tell you that, Sam.
That's your market.
I don't understand. That's one of our limitations, but
thank you, Mr. Covington.
Sam's one of our limitations.
We'll do what we can. Mr. Baker, continue, please.
The next item is a report from... the Sussex Housing Group, who asked to be on the agenda. And this is Gina and Macaronis.
I'll say my last name.
Yeah.
Mr. Anderes.
It's nice to be back. I'm meeting some of you for the first time. My name is Gina Misserandino with the Delaware Housing Coalition. We serve as the facilitator for the Sussex Housing Group. Thank you for this opportunity to present an overview of current Sussex County housing issues and solutions. We hope this will be the beginning of a dialogue with the Council on Housing Matters. We appreciate the Council's support of our work and opportunity to support your housing work as well. Formed in 1999, the mission of the Sussex Housing Group is to identify fair and affordable housing issues and to help the Sussex community address them with all deliberate speed. Today, we will use the commonly referenced housing tenure ladder to organize our presentation. Representing the major rungs of the housing ladder, local leaders will present to you. We also have a little booklet for you to also, which will serve as a reference. To keep to our allotted time, we are suggesting that, except for brief clarifications, the questions be held to the end. Again, thanks from all the members of the Sussex Housing Group and those with whom we serve. Marlena Gibson from the Delaware State Housing Authority will start with some facts and figures about housing in Sussex, and the others subsequently will introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, I did. In the binder, or the small packet, there's a one-page fact sheet on Sussex County housing facts and figures. Put this together fresh just since there were some new numbers from our most recent needs assessment, and these are just kind of handy numbers to have easily at hand. Two points that I just wanted to highlight were really the number of cost-burdened households in the county from 2007. These are households who are paying more than 30% of their income for housing. And as of 2007, there were almost 7,000 renters in the county who are paying more than 30% of their income for housing. This is really a sign of something we've seen in the last few decades, which is housing costs increasing far faster than incomes. Families have continued stretching their budgets to stay in their housing. And we also see it with homeowners as well. About 17,000 homeowners in Sussex County are cost burdened. And of those, about 50% have household incomes of less than $35,000 a year. So these are households who already have fairly low incomes and are paying a very significant portion of that income for their housing. I think another important point is the housing wage. This is a figure used from the National Low Income Housing Coalition to look at how much would a worker who is working full-time need to earn to be able to afford the fair market rent on a two-bedroom apartment in Sussex County. And for Sussex County in 2009, that's $13.73 an hour, which is a lot more than many, many jobs in the county and in the state as well. And the graphic here lists a few of them, fairly common positions in the county and in the state. I think something we've also seen in recent decades is very strong growth in many of these lower wage industries and projected continued very strong growth in many of these industries as well, showing that there's really a persistent and ongoing need for rental housing. So that's really just a kind of quick snapshot of housing needs. There's a full range, everything from homelessness and individuals who are in crisis through helping families buy their first homes. I think we covered most of them on the fact sheet, and we have a wealth of more information, but didn't want to bombard you with too much. DSHA, the Delaware State Housing Authority, is happy to be a resource for any other questions you have about housing facts and figures. You can always get in touch with me or also reach me through Bill and Brandy.
Good afternoon. My name is Kevin Gilmore from Sussex County Habitat for Humanity. On the top rung of the ladder that you have in your packets, I get to speak on fee simple home ownership. I want to highlight two self-help programs that are very active and serve our community. The first is our agency, Sussex County Habitat for Humanity. Our mission is to build simple, decent, and affordable homes with families in need in Sussex County. 39 local families have built and purchased Habitat homes. Applicants must live here or work here in the county. They qualify based on housing need, ability to pay. We're serving families between 25 and 60% of AMI, the area median income, and the willingness to partner, which is to help in the construction of their home and other Habitat homes. Funds come from a variety of sources, including the council, foundations, banks, churches, civic organizations. Our homes sell for about $110,000 with a no-interest mortgage, which is held by Habitat. We currently work in Seaford, Laurel, Selbyville, Frankfort, and this year we expect to house 10 families. The other program is Milford Housing Development Corporation. They have a thriving mutual self-help housing program. Through the USDA Rural Development funded program, they have created over 90 new homes in Sussex County and Kent County, with an additional 200 self-help units in the pipeline. They're currently serving Sussex County with projects in Seaford and Laurel. This program makes home ownership accessible to low and moderate income families. They're serving families who earn 80% or less than AMI, and they even focus 40% of their clients must be 50% under AMI. Both of our programs are also participating with the Neighborhood Stabilization Program here in Sussex County.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Meyer. I'm the director of NCAL Research. That's the National Council on Agricultural Life and Labor. We provide important home ownership services, and that's what I'm really here to talk about is home ownership and affordable housing. We're based in Dover, but we have offices in each county, and our Sussex office is located at 110 South Bedford Street here in Georgetown, just two blocks away next to the fire station. The first service I wanted to share about is home ownership counseling. And this is a service where we assist families to work on their finances, to learn home ownership responsibilities, become mortgage ready for their first home. We do group workshops and individual counseling. We have a proven curriculum, and we have access to attractive conventional fixed rate mortgage products as well as Rural Development 502 program. Basically, what families learn is to become informed consumers making sound choices, work on credit issues, developing a budget, starting to save, and reducing debts. We've done about, we've had a track record of 7,000 first-time homebuyers throughout the state. And our counselors have substantial experience and are trained and certified by HUD and NeighborWorks. For families that have particularly difficult financial situations, they go through a Growing Your Money financial literacy program. This is a five-week financial fitness class, and it helps to develop a customized work plan for each family to follow. Even in this difficult home ownership market at this point in time, NCAL averages about 40 to 50 first-time home buyer closings a year in Sussex County. The second service is an unfortunate service, but it's one that we provide, and that is foreclosure prevention. And some families are facing hardships, obviously through loss of jobs or layoffs and plant closings or store closings. And some families who perhaps didn't go through home ownership education got mortgages that they couldn't afford. Just to give you an idea, and this is statewide numbers, but February and March were record-breaking months in Delaware with over 500 foreclosures in each month. So that's over 1,500 foreclosures the first quarter of calendar 09. And April evidently doesn't look any better. Nothing worse than losing a home, having to start over with your financial condition in shambles. We provide workshops in Sussex County monthly. We have foreclosure prevention counselor dedicated to Sussex. Our caseload has rather dramatically increased from last year. It's doubled. We have about 100 clients that are in process right now. And if people come to us early enough and we'll work through the whole process, we have some real successes of people being able to retain their homes. On kind of a final note, NCAL is a community development financial institution that we're certified by U.S. Department of Treasury, CDFI they call it. We're the only downstate CDFI, and we do lending to nonprofits for affordable housing and community development. Occasionally, we've even lent to jurisdictions. For instance, the town of Greenwood needed gap financing while they were waiting for state funding for their water system. But we can lend pre-development, acquisition, construction, lines of credit, working capital, and a number of community facilities loans to assist nonprofits here in Sussex County. What we do is help to bring in investments and loan participations and credit from outside of Delaware, perhaps from Treasury or from NeighborWorks, Bank of America, Wachovia, different sources, so that we can use it here within the state. And just finally, NCAL is HUD certified. We're a NeighborWorks chartered organization. We're one of 240 members of this network of excellence, a top producer in the state and the region, and we're ranked exemplary by NeighborWorks. We've been around since 1976, and we appreciate your attention to affordable housing.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Don't call me Vance. Okay. My name's Van Temple, and I'm with the Diamond State Community Land Trust. We're kind of the new kid on the block on the housing tenure ladder. Most homeownership is fee simple. Ours is shared equity, where the community land trust owns the land even after the home buyer owns the house. So the home is affordable for the first buyer, and then it is affordable for the buyer after them when they go on. We're set up by and created by the Delaware State Housing Authority, Delaware Housing Coalition. We're very much a partnership organization with the other groups here. In fact, our largest project is a partnership with Milford Housing and NCAL, and it's in Sussex County, New Horizons Project, 50 units. It's in your planning and zoning section right now, going through reviews. Hopefully that'll be approved soon. There's a little one-pager in there, I believe. I haven't seen the booklet that explains what we do. It's the first statewide community land trust in the country. Even though this is a new concept in Delaware, it's been proven around the country quite well for the last 25 years. One of the remarkable statistics these days in the unfortunate situation of the foreclosure crisis is that community land trust owners are more than six times less likely to be in foreclosure than regular fee simple home ownership. And the reasons for this are that the homeowner is in a permanent relationship with the community land trust. Because they own the land, you can't refinance without the permission of the community land trust. So that's prevented a number of people from making poor decisions. Also, community land trusts are there to help buyers at the first sign of trouble instead of waiting until too late. So those are some highlights. I think I've covered it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm Dave Moore. Excuse me. I'm with President and CEO of Milford Housing Development Corporation. We operate many of the programs at the Sussex Housing Groups here to talk to you today about all over this county as well as King County. However, I'm here today to talk to you about our rental housing programs and what we do. We have existing complexes in Milton and Georgetown and Milford, as well as Greenwood. Of the 220 plus units we own and manage, about 151 or 150 plus are located here in Sussex County. We have land secured right now for an additional 80 some units in Sussex County in different complexes. We don't build large complexes. We're in the 35 to 50, 60 range. So typically we're in rural areas. The other thing I wanted to highlight is this year we were a regional recipient of an Energy Star Award given out by Energy Star as well as HUD for our latest rental complex, which is located in Felton. We utilize a variety of funding sources from federal, state, local, private financing to package dollars together to make sure that these complexes are affordable, and many of the complexes have rental assistance tied to them, which allow us to reach down to the lowest of the low in the county. I think we have a full range of services at our shop in Milford, from engineering to packaging financing. We work with many of the partners that are here doing that, as well as a developer and a general contractor, which to my knowledge, as far as the rental complexes, we're one of the few, if the only one in Kent and Sussex County, that actually are a general contractor and have done projects for the State Housing Authority as well as local area. Thank you for your time, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Stewart. I actually work for Sussex Community Crisis Housing Services, and I'm the program director at Crisis House, which I'm sure you all know. We're the 30-day emergency homeless shelter right on 110 North Railroad Avenue, and we're kind of right on the front line when all the other things don't work and they find themselves with nothing. They come to us. I do believe we're the only shelter in Sussex County that does serve children. We do have a 20-bed facility. We do serve men, women, and children. No matter their age or anything like that. We provide meals three times a day, plus an evening snack at no charge to them. We do have small grants that we have. A lot of our, probably about $35,000 last year actually came from donations right from the community of Georgetown, which we thank you very much for. Why they come into our shelter, we try to focus immediately on employment and housing for them. We try to get them working, try to get them saving some money. 30 days is not a long time to get your life back on track. And what we're finding is once they're finding jobs, which most of them find jobs at most of the chicken plants and things like that, the income just isn't enough for them to find adequate housing. A lot of the housing lists are very long. A lot of them don't have savings for security deposit and things like that. So we do try to network with the community through churches, State Service Center, Catholic Charities, and try to get the people that we know are ready to move on to succeed the help that they can do that. We also run our Northport Transitional Apartments. That's kind of like a step up after the women kind of get themselves back together. It's for women with children. They have to be working full-time, and they also have to be having some kind of ongoing education to improve for getting a job and things like that. We work with them on getting their credit back together, and we enter them into the home ownership program, which we work through with First State Community Action. Once they get on track with that, it's usually about a year to a two-year stay, and then hopefully we can move them on into being self-sufficient and being able to manage a household and possibly even own their own home. And we also have two transitional houses that we do for families that are complete mother, father, children. And that's kind of giving, a lot of times that's people that have had fires, have lost their own homes, or something devastating happened. We'll put them in our transitional house for about a year or two at lower income, and then hopefully get them into where they can get back to being self-sufficient as well. And this is my first time, so I'm nervous.
No, you did good. You did good.
Fine. But we do network with everyone in the community. I mean, we work with the Way Home program. All of our people that come through Crisis House go to Brandywine Counseling, and they're immediately assessed for any drug or alcohol addictions, any mental health issues. And if they're required to go there or recommended to go there, then that's part of the requirement to stay at Crisis House. We do also do background checks on everyone that comes through the facility because we do have children. We check to make sure they don't have warrants because we don't want to harbor anyone. and we also make sure they're not sex offenders because we do have children in our facility. And I think the need the most that we've seen is a lot more of two-parent families and a lot of single mothers that have multiple children. There for a while we were seeing, you know, single moms that might have one or two. You know, I just had one the other day, a mom with six kids with her and two living with families. So, you know, we try to, when they come in, we try to give them all the services and refer them out so that they can get all the counseling they can for any issues that the family might have and things like that.
Thank you. Does the council have any questions for the group? Thank you all very much.
Thank you. The next item is the county administrator's report, and I'll hand out a copy. I just might add that Brandy Bennett from the community development office is here today, and of course our office works with these agencies on almost an everyday basis, and they have a good working relationship. County Government Day is tomorrow, and this is for Girls and Boys State, and will be held here in the County Council Chambers beginning at 9:15 a.m. As in the past, a mock County Council session will be held with students picked as council members, and the student representatives are from throughout the county, and you're all welcome to attend if you would like. National Association of County Newsletter. Vice President George Cole was profiled in the National Association of Counties newsletter dated April 20th. Mr. Cole serves as the Delaware representative on the National Association of Counties Board of Directors and attached is a copy.
Can we get that on the county website?
Just get it on your refrigerator. That's all I want you to do.
You want to bow to you, George?
Yes, I do.
The next item is a information regarding the Woodlands and Millsboro proposed sewer district public hearing. On April 30th at 6 p.m. at the Millsboro VFW near the Arby's, the County Engineering Department will be holding a public hearing regarding the proposed Woodlands and Millsboro sewer district. A subsequent referendum will be held, which is scheduled on June 25th. And swine flu update, the State of Delaware Department of Health and Social Services is the lead agency in terms of appropriate response for the State of Delaware. The Sussex County Emergency Operations Department and the Paramedic Department are monitoring activities closely. Dispatch responses have been amended for our dispatchers to request information regarding recent travel for 911 callers who exhibit flu-like symptoms. County staff is participating in conference calls relating to this matter. And attached is a copy available on the Delaware Health and Social Services website, as well as a contact number for that agency, 888-295-5156. The Delaware Health and Social Services website has the latest up-to-date information, and we have that listed on the report. I know there was a conference call, statewide conference call yesterday to discuss the issue, and as of to my understanding, there are no known cases in Delaware at this point.
Sam, thanks, Sam. You're not raising any pigs, are you?
My pigs are flu free.
Any questions for Mr. Baker? If not, we'll turn the meeting over to our finance director, Susan Webb.
Thank you. Okay.
Can you pass something out?
Yes. Yeah.
To us,
today we're going
to
go over the general fund revenue and expense report for the 9 months ending March 31st and the estimated actual for the fiscal year ended 2009. And you've received this report in your packet, but I'll pass them down in case you didn't bring them. I know it's a lot.
Does anybody need one?
Okay.
Sam, you got yours?
I know you studied them all weekend.
Here,
all
send,
the numbers.
Send that right back to you.
Send you right back. Thank you. The first one I'll go over is the one titled General Fund Revenue and Expense Report for the period ending March 31st, 2009. It has the year-to-date actual, and then budget amounts, annual, and then year-to-date, which is annualized, and then the percent over or under budget. And this report is the actual snapshot of our financial picture as of March 31st, 2009, 9 months, three quarters. I'll go through them briefly by the categories. The taxes. Taxes, we know, are due September 30th. So this, you can't really look at this report and use and look at the taxes and the percentage over under budget, because taxes are front-ended. They all come in the beginning, then they trickle down as the time goes in. So the 33%, when you analyze the budget, it doesn't really work for taxes because they're basically due September 30th, and that's when the bulk of our money comes in, although this will be important later on when we look at the estimated report. Realty transfer tax, this is where we're at March, down 21%. That's about $2.8 million off our budget. The services, building, and construction category, down 27%. You can see the real estate-related categories throughout there, fire service fees, building permits. They're all down. Fire service fees, $300,000. Building permits, $366,000. And building inspections, $135,000, bringing us our revenue down. Governmental services are okay. We will get our general government fee, our 911 fee. Intergovernmental, which are grants, only off a little bit there. We can pretty much hit the grants right on, the biggest one being the paramedic grant, and we get basically 40% of what we spend. The constitutional offices, budget to actual, we're up 12%. And if you look at the detail in that, which is very interesting, Course, deeds is down 15%. Deeds is, would be considered a real estate-related office. But the sheriff is up 121%. That's over $900,000. The sheriff's department's been very busy with the foreclosures, and I think this elected sheriff has a really good focus on getting out there and getting the work done. Unfortunately, the work right now is the foreclosure market. Rents, 19%. We pretty much know what they are because we have leases, so we can set that. And then the different miscellaneous thing, the biggest one there is the interest is off, as we know, watching the market. And we've talked about it here in the pension plan. The interest income is very low right now. So bringing us down generally to revenues being off, if you look at the year-to-date actual revenues of 38 and the prorated of 41, where we should be, we're about $2 million off of what revenue should be, but we know the economy is not strong right now. On the second page are the expenditures, and just some of the bigger ones here and how this works. The same theory applies, just annualizing the expenses, and you'll see the over and under budget. All of the expenses on the year-to-date actual are still under the budget, which is the way it should be. Although you might see where some fall out being annualized for the 9 months over, in total, they're all still under. And a good example of that would be the Emergency Operations Center has a lot of software renewals where we might pay them in July or August. So we've put that expense out. So it's also in the front of the first 9 months. But overall in the year, we're still within the budget. Under another important point here, you'll see I'm 93% over. That's because the insurance has not been allocated yet. That will be a year-end entry. Personnel expense is 602% over. Same thing, that they have workers' comp insurance where it's all paid out of personnel account, but when we get the actual salaries at the end of the year, paramedics and water and sewer allocate. Paramedics is a big portion of the workers' comp expense. So that's just a reallocation. But that's why it looks a little different right now. LEPC, 66%. Lower. That's because it was in the budget a full year, but we just started funding it with having an employee dedicated mid-year. Same with economic development. Engineering administration, it looks up 20%, and basically we had some one-time expenditures occur in the beginning of the year, which we wouldn't have at the end of the year, so that's why the first 9 months show more than what the year-to-date annualization would be, but overall it's under budget. So that brings us down very close, a negative 5% savings. So the excess revenue over expenditures, we're still kind of treading water and holding our own for the 9 months ending March, is a small positive number, $143,000.
Do you have that number from last year at this period of time?
We didn't do it this time last year. I do have it for the 6 months ending December, and I could get it for you, Vance. I just don't have it at my fingertips. I mean, we do it. I do this every month. I just don't have it right here with me.
Okay. Please continue.
The next shows the capital improvement revenues and expenditures. Basically, on the capital improvement expenditures, makes up the property acquisition we had in July and the airport improvements. And for the airport improvements, most all of it's is we have grant money to support those expenditures. So that's where we're at right now for the 9 months ending March 31st, 2009. If we go to the next report for the general fund, the estimated revenues and expenditures for the year ending June 30, 2009. So I pick up where we are, where we're at with the actual March 31st, and I estimate 2 months, and I come up with the estimated actual total for June 30, 2009, which would be a full year to see where we would finish our fiscal year at.
Did you say 2 months or 3 months?
3 months, I'm sorry. Okay. April, May, and June, you're right. On the revenue side, some of the revenues, in looking at it and trying to be conservative, I looked at an annualized basis, and I also looked at what our March collections would be, and I kind of took the lesser of to see where the economy was, because it's a little different the spring months in real estate-related revenue than it is all throughout the winter months. For instance, we might see a little bump in the building permits count and really transfer tax and inspections because some people are doing some business right now. So I kind of looked at March and gauged it on that, which was more conservative than annualizing it. Also on the grants, for instance, the paramedic grant, I could work backwards because I know if I know what we'll spend, then I know what we'll take in. So that's the revenues, the estimated revenues, $45.4 million. And then on the expenses, you'll see, require a little bit of explanation also for the estimated amount. Getting into the end of our fiscal year is also a little different. We have accruals and certain items that I know that we will be doing for the last month particular of our year. For instance, the sewer grants. I know we have sewer obligations. The Angola Sewer District is one of them where I'll pay over that grant money at the end of the fiscal year. We don't have it in the it's in the budget, but we haven't made that expenditure the first 9 months of the year. But I know that we've obligated that, and I will do that at the end of the year. So I know where we're going to be on certain grants. The police grants, another example. We run all year on a cash basis, but I know in the last 3 months of the year I'm going to have two more payments because I'll have the third quarter payment, and then I'll have the last payment, which will actually happen in July, but I'll accrue it back into this year. Same with the fire company grants or the local law enforcement. I pretty much know what we're going to pay out in those. As for the other expenditures, I just did an analyze the first 9 months of the year and kind of looked and see where we'd finish. Coming down to the end, you'll see where I'm estimating for the year ending June 30 and 9 that we will finish at around $3.7 million deficit. Now, this is important for a couple of reasons. When we talked about it in December, it was a $7.7 million deficit versus...
January, we spoke about it.
Yes, we did. We spoke in January for the 6 month ending December, a $7.7 million deficit. And that was what the picture was looking like. And the $7.7 million deficit was based on the budget. So you had the budget at one place and the revenues, but the revenues were steadily dropping down for the year because the economy wasn't getting any better. And so that we realized, with the direction of the council and the county administrator, that we needed to do budget cuts. And that's what we did weeks later. We brought in budget cuts where we didn't increase any positions. We froze overtime. We grounded the vehicles. We stopped travel. We took back some of the grants. We got real serious with delinquencies and started collecting money through delinquencies. Stopped many capital purchases and started doing intercompany loans for the sewer districts that had realty transfer tax loans outstanding. And because of that, in the last 3 months, we've tried to save as much money as we can, and I think it's being reflected in the next 3 months of the year and the estimated for the end of the year. And based on this, I think our picture is looking a little bit better, although we still have, you know, we still have to follow our path with the budget cuts that we are doing. Any questions?
Any questions for Ms. Webb? Mr. Baker, do you have anything?
Yes. One of the things I'd like to do is just hand out a report that showed some of the savings that we talked about back in January that Mrs. Webb just mentioned, and try to give you an estimate on what these have resulted in terms of savings that have helped contribute towards reducing that deficit down from 7.7 million estimate to 3.7. And this isn't the full story, but it does certainly help contribute towards the reduction of that number. As you can see, some of these, and this is as of today, our estimate for this fiscal year. So with the additional months, most of these items, we will accrue some more savings through May and June also. And as you can see, the largest item is salary and benefit costs, where we use existing staff and we reorganized offices and used attrition to basically use it to help cover where people have left for one reason or another, and we use existing staff to cover their positions. The next largest item is, and Mrs. Webb mentioned, was recovery of interest on loans to sewer construction projects, $314,000. And then we have quite a few other items. Public Works, less reliance on outside engineer for plan review, $30,000. Transferring some general fund employees from the general fund department in engineering to water and sewer that where they really belonged. $26,000 reduction in overtime pay through paramedics in their emergency preparedness offices in particular, $43,000 voluntary employee furloughs or time off without pay, and voluntary employee group hospital opt-out, where the employees had the option to opt out of our group hospital. So far, those have saved us about $11,000. Electric savings just in Georgetown, in their buildings in Georgetown, we estimate $2,000 so far this year. So these are just some of the things. Some of them aren't that large, but they all add up to help reduce that estimated deficit for the year.
Very good. Any questions of Mr. Baker?
How'd you save the, you say electric savings?
What we did...
How'd you do that?
Gina and Kathy Raw... Well, first of all, we reduced the temperature for heat.
Good.
And raised the temperature for air conditioning in the building. But I don't think there's been a particularly major... We have not heard a major outcry about that.
No. It's improved.
But if you don't tell them, they probably won't know it.
You didn't use a lot of those silly light bulbs.
Well, I want to compliment Mr. Baker, Ms. Great. Webb, and Gina and Kathy Roth for their work on this. These quarterly reports, I think, are very helpful. I think we're seeing today, back in January, we were looking at a $7.7 million deficit. Today, through your hard work and the work of all the county employees, we are only, quote, unquote, looking at a $3.7 million deficit. We've got a long road to hoe, but I believe we've got a good start. Thank you all. Any other questions?
Good job.
If not, we will turn it back over to Mr. Baker for the report on the early retirement option.
Okay.